Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's another Max Verstappen victory in Canada, but Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton are bullish about having run the Dutchman close in the podium battle. This is the F1 Strategy Report. My name's Michael Laminato, and this is Round 8, the Canadian Grand Prix. This wasn't domination as we'd come to know it from Max Verstappen, whose Red Bull racing car wasn't quite at home around Montreal's fast and chilly Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. A brilliant pole in mixed conditions in the wet set him up for an every-lap-led victory, but the pursuing Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton were a factor until the final pit stops. The gap was never more than around 5 seconds for most of the race, and though the upgraded Aston and Mercedes cars didn't quite have the pace to apply decisive pressure, they did turn in an exciting battle for second place. It was Alonso who got that job done, despite nursing what the team thought was a fuel system problem. Without it, and on a traditional track, the two-time champion is confident his team is closing the gap. But there's no getting around Verstappen's ballooning victory tally and championship points advantage, and to talk us through his 41st career win, I'm joined by F1 journalist Claire Cottingham. Claire, how are you going?
Really good, thank you. A bit annoyed about the cricket, but other than that, I'm sure you guys are elated that you're starting your morning knowing that you're leading the Ashes 1-0, but you know, we're not salty at all over here, we're all fine.
It's a superb outcome. Well-timed podcast recording, I think it's fair to say. Let's look at Canada though. You know what, the Canadians don't know. Oh, maybe they do know what cricket is. I don't know actually, haven't really thought about it. But let's look at the Canadian Grand Prix and that 41st victory first of all. 21 of Max's 41 victories have come in this regulatory era, so it's fair to say his rate of wins are moving pretty quickly. He's equal diet and centre. He's not far behind Alain Prost now. But this didn't feel quite like his other wins this season. It wasn't nearly half a minute, more like 10 seconds. Is that a sign things might be changing, or are people getting too ahead of themselves?
I think it's really interesting. I think it's very track-specific for this one especially. The Red Bulls were really struggling this whole weekend. Sergio Perez didn't even get out of Q2 to get into Q3, so we already saw that there was an issue there. And Max himself was mentioning that the brakes were overheating. He couldn't get the heat into the tyres. They were getting cold quite quickly. So I think that's a really significant point we need to remember. But also not just that, you know, Mercedes are starting to really understand their new side pod upgrades, and Aston Martin brought upgrades as well. And I think, or well, maybe not Ferrari so much, that maybe they'll bring an upgrade that we're excited about soon. But Aston Martin and Mercedes are definitely closing that gap a little bit more. So I don't think it was as comfortable as we've seen from Max Verstappen in the past. And I think just for Red Bull in general, however, I wouldn't get too excited yet, because we do have the Red Bull Ring coming up next, which is obviously Red Bull's home track as well. So it's somewhere Max really enjoys. The Max fans come out in full force. We haven't seen the Max Verstappen army come to a track for a little while now. So he'll have them back under shouting his name as he goes round, and their orange flares if they're allowed them in. So it'll be interesting to see if that has a bit of an impact on his performance.
Yes, flare usage has been quite low so far this season, so that'll be a noticeable difference, I suspect.
I think they're banned, though.
Oh, are they? Well, I mean, they're always banned, though, aren't they? Pretty much everywhere. So I don't know if that'll make a massive difference, but we'll see. We will see, I suppose. I want to sort of take this, I guess, team by team, because I think there's some quite interesting performance differentiators as we go down the grid. But just sticking with Red Bull for one moment, because in the end for Max, it was pretty straightforward. Two-stop, never lost the lead. In fact, hasn't lost the lead since Miami, which was more than a month ago, if anyone's counting. But let's look at the other car, Sergio Perez, who had another difficult weekend. He had the same strategy the Ferrari drivers had, which we'll talk about momentarily. Also, he is, you know, historically, I don't know if we should keep using Sergio Perez's historical nicknames, but like the Tire Whisperer, he's lost his King of Streets nickname, I guess. Maybe this is all bad luck. But it seemed like he couldn't really extract anything from being on a one-stop strategy either. And more to the point, I guess, having what still was the fastest car. What percentage, I guess, breakdown looking at this race, do we think this is Perez bad form compared to perhaps him not gelling with the car at the moment, maybe just on this circuit?
I don't know if I could do percentage-wise because I think that will get me into a whole heap of trouble with Sergio Perez fans. But I would say at the moment, I think Checo is incredibly lacking in confidence. And I think when you're lacking in confidence, you don't need to be at a track like Canada. It's not a track that particularly suits him. He crashed here, I think, in qualifying last year. It's a track that he doesn't show a lot of confidence in general. And it's a track that Red Bull have said is a bit of a tricky one for them. And he's come off the back of two incredibly hard race weekends as well, if you think of Monaco and Spain. They were not his strongest races. So when you're lacking confidence and you're coming into a track like Canada, you're asking for a whole heap of trouble, really. I think for Sergio, there's absolutely no reason why his confidence won't take a boost and it won't, you know, go back up into where we're used to seeing it. But I think at the moment, his dip in form is definitely something that's maybe causing a bit of concern for Red Bull. And you heard, you know, I think it was in Spain, Christian Horner coming around and saying, oh, no, you know, we've got all of our confidence in Checo. He's done a brilliant job and this will give him confidence, et cetera, et cetera. His performance, I think he was talking about in Spain, it will give him a bit more confidence moving forward. And again, we saw Canada, a tricky race weekend. So I think it is Checo confidence related, but I do also think he's not extracting exactly what Max Verstappen is getting out of that car. But I also do think you need to be incredibly careful when you talk about how good that Red Bull is, because when you do that, it sort of takes away how good actually Max Verstappen is this year. And I think it's maybe we're not giving him the credit he deserves for driving the wheels off a car that is, yes, good. Don't get me wrong, it's good. But is Checo showing the true pace of the car? And Max is getting something incredibly amazing out of it. I don't know. That's sort of where, you know, you'd have to switch cars to get the real answer. But I think we're not giving Max Verstappen maybe the credit he deserves in what he's doing at the moment. I mean, he drove around in Canada with half a bird hanging out of his brake duct, you know, and he still managed to win the race. That's quite the flex. So it's an interesting one for Checo, but I think once he gets a bit more confidence under his belt, he'll be able to, you know, get back into winning ways.
It's a great call about Max as well. I mean, we don't have to look at performances like his on Saturday during qualifying when he was more than a second faster than anyone else in really tricky conditions. Conditions we know he's extremely good in. Some of his favourite conditions, perhaps, in terms of where he can find most pace. Just on Perez, I thought that was interesting. You know, the confidence question I find really interesting, and Christian Horner's comments after the previous race in Spain, saying essentially the pressure was off him now because the championship seemed so far away. I'm not convinced Red Bull knows all of the time the best way to build up its drivers, and I can't help but wonder what that might be playing a role in Perez's mind.
Yeah, I think at the moment Sergio is slotting very happily with the team, not how Checo's seeing it, I probably would assume, but I think with the team, I think he is very much not causing any issues with Max. He's not getting in the way. The only thing I think that they would say is a real issue is that he is not fighting behind Max to keep the likes of Fernando Alonso away from Max. And at the moment, they can't even touch him. But you know what I mean, in that sort of way, trying to at least challenge Max for second place. But the closer we see with the Aston Martins and the Mercedes getting closer to Red Bull, the more that Max will need Sergio on his side. Because you know, otherwise it's leaving Max exposed to teams that are starting to close up a bit to Red Bull. So yeah, it's an interesting one in terms of all the politics. You know, Christian Horner never says a word without meaning, without having a lot of meaning behind his words. He's very calculated in how he says things. So whatever he's saying, there will be a reason for his edited version of what he said. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I do truly believe that when Checo gets a bit more confidence, we'll see him back. Because you have to remember, he's won, what, two races this year?
Yeah.
He's the only other driver, apart from his teammate, who's won. It's a full Red Bull winning season so far, but it's not like it's been Max the whole time. Azerbaijan, you know, Sergio Perez won, and he won because of his tyre management as well. Let's not forget, he had incredible tyre management in Baku. So yeah, it's an interesting, the politics inside Red Bull are always an interesting one to dissect, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely right. And hopefully he can have that confidence rebound, if not just to give us something worthwhile for the season in the battle for the front, but also for his own sake, you know? He's got another year on that contract. We need some confidence in this.
Yeah, but also we need someone fighting for some wins, because otherwise, though I will say Canada gave me a lot of confidence seeing the second place battle between Fernando Alonso and Lewis. Like that for me was, in some ways, it's not that I didn't care that you know what was going on at the front, but it really gave something exciting to watch and be enthralled by throughout the race. So that was definitely great. And also, you know, it's Fernando versus Lewis. Like, what more can you ask for?
And yet they're so chummy in their later years in Formula One, aren't they? It's not maybe the rivalry people would have expected.
Ah, but it was the same with Sebastian and Lewis. You know, I think it gets to the point where they realise that. With maturity comes a very different mindset. And I know through, you know, from when I was in my 20s, the maturity levels that maybe I have now, or the way I look at things or the way I approach things are incredibly different. It doesn't mean that the will and passion for what I want to do is different, but it does, you do get a little bit more perspective, I think, as you get a little bit older. So I think probably that's got a lot to do with it.
Well, let's talk about that battle now, because that certainly was interesting and had, for a brief period of time anyway, potential undertones of a battle for the lead that ultimately never eventuated. But that battle for second was really interesting. Hamilton got Alonso off the line. Mm-hmm. Alonso repassed in the middle stint. Mm-hmm. Then we got this great battle in the last stint where Hamilton switched to mediums. Alonso was still on the hards. And Hamilton really was able to close in onto the back of Alonso. There had been around about a 5-second gap, reduced that to down to about 2. But couldn't really close the gap in the end. And I wonder, you know, this is a good moment for Mercedes compared to where we started the season. They're pretty pleased with that upgrade package. They've got another one coming in Silverstone. They feel like they're on the right track now. Mm. How much do you think that was a little bit of a small reality check about the fact that the customer team continues to have a pretty handy advantage? And I guess inversely for Aston Martin, that they also are on the right track here.
Yeah, I think none of the upgrades so far that have come, you even look at Williams, none of the upgrades that we've seen so far has seen any of the teams go backwards that I can think of. I'm just trying to desperately think if we've seen anyone else now. But Williams have done an incredible job. You know, they only had Alex Albon this time because they couldn't afford Logan Sargeant, but we'll get to see what Logan can do in the future. And then the radical change that we saw for the Mercedes and the quite a big visual change that we saw for the Aston Martin coming into Canada as well. I think for me, they are quite neck and neck. And that's what's really exciting about the Aston and the Mercedes at the moment. You know, we have this sort of to and fro, don't we, where it's like Aston have overtaken Mercedes and Mercedes are now going to, you know, they have to sit third. And then it's like, oh, what about Mercedes? They've done amazingly. Now they've leapfrogged Aston Martin. You have to remember lots of these things are track specific and lots of it comes down to, you know, qualifying as well. And we had such a jumbled up qualifying session on our Saturday for Canada, didn't we? So who knows what happens now when we go to Aston. To the Red Bull Ring, and it's a more traditional track. We've gone to street circuit after street circuit after street circuit and Spain, you know. So we're gonna see a traditional track now. So it'll be a chance for them to really shake out the upgrades that they were meant to shake out in Imola. Because remember the Mercedes. Upgrades were meant to come in Imola, obviously. So it'll be a real chance to see a bit more of a shakeout of these upgrades. But I think for me, we've definitely seen both of the Aston Martin and the Mercedes really, really close up. And we say Aston Martin and Mercedes, we're talking about Fernando Alonso and we're talking about the Mercedes. I think Lance Stroll is really being shown out at the moment for how far behind he is compared to his teammate. But he's in the unlucky situation, as many other drivers have been, that he's up against Fernando Alonso. You know, he's one of the greatest in all time of Formula One. So, but I think when we're talking about the Astons, we're talking about Fernando, to be clear. But I think we've got a really tasty battle coming in. I think if you take away the first place position person, then we've got a great battle.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's better to just put a little sticker over that part of the television for people watching at home and imagine that we've got a great lead back. You have to mute the commentary for that to work as well, obviously.
Yeah,
you can
do your own bounce. Alternative commentary, yeah, exactly. Maybe you and I could do that for one race. We'll do the alternative commentary.
Yeah, I think there could be something in that, certainly.
Yeah, totally.
On that Lance Stroll point, for a moment, I mean, he was caught out by the early safety car upon which virtually all of the strategy hinged. He was starting, or he'd pitted already, rather, one lap before the safety car was deployed. Did recover to minor points, but it does underline that question, doesn't it? That Aston Martin was talking about, or Lawrence Stroll anyway, was talking about the potential for a double podium finish this weekend, and Lance never really looked like he was up for it. Wasn't that quick in the wet in qualifying either, despite that being part of his, I suppose, folklore, if you like, of when he managed to extract some of his best performances. George Russell, on the other hand, was up there in pace but crashed and caused that safety car. How different do you suspect this battle could have been if we'd had two drivers from those teams involved? And do you think it's likely we will get Lance Stroll involved at some point?
It's a really interesting one, actually, because I was talking about this the other day about if George Russell hadn't crashed, I think he would have absolutely been up there fighting it out. And would he have taken away a place from Sergio Perez, even in sixth place? Would he have taken that place without his crash? Because even with his crash, he, and I know probably there was some still pit stops to before he retired, he was in eighth place, wasn't he? So, yeah, I think that would have been a good battle. Do I think that Lance Stroll would have been up there in the battle if he hadn't have qualified? I don't know. I don't think he would have been. He hasn't this season. So why would suddenly Canada be? It was his home race. He had such a chance of, you know, really proving his worth in this amazing car, which we've worked out is amazing. It has these upgrades that have really elevated Fernando Alonso. And he was, you know, like I said, he was at his home Grand Prix. This should have been somewhere that he was feeding off the crowd and feeding off the energy and feeding off everything. And it felt for me like he didn't. He got unlucky with the safety car. Let's not be unfair about that. But it didn't feel like he was pushing in the same way that someone like Fernando Alonso does. He sort of gets quite complacent. I mean, I'll probably get in trouble for saying that with Lance Stroll fans, but he feels like he gets quite complacent quite quickly in races. And we see glimpses of really interesting stuff with Lance. But do I think he would have been up there fighting with his teammate? No. Do I think George Russell would have been up there fighting with his teammate? Yeah, absolutely, I do.
There's this awful irony that he seemed to be at his best when his wrists were broken. So I don't know what we should read into that. But, hopefully he can turn it around. The car seems good.
Well, yeah, exactly. Fingers crossed. I think there is absolute potential there. And he's not a bad driver. I just think that he needs to unlock exactly what Fernando Alonso is unlocking in that Aston Martin, because it's looking incredibly strong and exciting to watch.
It will be interesting when we get to some more. I mean, the word representative we throw around a lot. We've got so many different tracks that I feel like sometimes a little bit meaningless, but a more regular, more ordinary race circuit, because Montreal is a little bit of an outlier. And also because of the fact that we did have this, at the time, undisclosed issue on Fernando's car. It ended up being the team thought that there wasn't as much fuel in there as there actually was.
Yeah, that was a weird one, wasn't it?
Yes.
Was it the brakes? Was it the fuel? Was it that everyone was speculating? Mercedes were on the radio saying, Lewis, it's definitely the brakes. It's definitely this. It's definitely that. Well, didn't they say it was the brakes to Lewis? I think that's what they said to him.
They did, yeah.
And then afterwards, everyone said, actually, it was nothing.
Yeah, there's no problem at all.
Yeah, it was very confusing. But yeah, sorry, carry on.
No, just like it could have just been an enormous flex from the team going, even if we're simulating a problem, we can still finish ahead.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's like the bird in the brake ducts, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all set up. It's all a conspiracy for television.
Yeah.
The drive to survive,
it's
I think.
It's all the Truman Show.
Yeah. But without that issue, it will be interesting to see where the balance of performance lies, I suppose. And we do have four relatively traditional, well, they're all pretty traditional circuits anyway, coming up before the break. That'll give us a reasonable picture of that performance. Also, it'll be interesting to see where Ferrari falls into that.
No.
And I'm struggling, Claire, to figure out if I think this is a good or bad weekend for Ferrari, because we saw a pretty competent race, I think, pretty capable race.
Yeah.
But it was a real roller coaster to get there. In qualifying, the drivers were very upset. Let's not lie. They were pretty angry.
Really upset. Especially Charles. It was the, you know, shouting over the radio about his tyres, wasn't he? That was that one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So they all merge into one, Charles being angry on the radio. Yeah, it's a funny one with Ferrari, isn't it? They almost went under the radar completely, because I felt like in the race, there was Carlos Sainz showing some really racy moments. He had some great battles. But do I think they were sort of pootling around and just managed to look. I think it's a good performance. Is it the best performance? And is it the performance that maybe we thought we were going to get from Ferrari this time last year? Mm. No. We saw such strength in the Ferraris last year. You know, Charles leading the championship, heading into, I'm going to show my lack of remembering now, but he was leading the championship at the beginning of last season, and was in the battle for the championship. And this year they've come in and they've really even struggled to get off the mark. And now it's, again, it's that sort of, have Mercedes leapfrogged them, have Aston Martin leapfrogged them. They're fighting. They're fighting hard. But I felt like Canada for them was a real, I felt like a bit of a quiet race for them, really. I almost don't have much to say about them. Should I? I feel like I should have more to say for them. But they sort of, yeah, I think it's definitely encouraging, their turnaround. I think Charles Leclerc said after the race, didn't he, that he felt that it was positive and that they recovered from a really challenging qualifying session to score some strong points. And that's absolutely true. They did. They absolutely did. And I think for them, once they start working out their tyres, which they're really still struggling with, this tyre wear, and they really did, they have been struggling for tyre life wear in most tracks so far, haven't they? Mm-hmm. I think they can be happy with their encouraging weekend so far. But Charles dropped out of qualifying in Q2, didn't he? Yeah. But you know, it was one of those funny qualifying sessions that nobody quite understood because the rain came in. But I think, yeah, he started quite far back, started 10th, didn't he? So I think it was a good recovery drive, definitely from the both. But yes, their qualifying pace is usually very good, so it was good to see their race pace bettering their qualifying pace, I guess.
Yeah, it was an interesting turnaround, I guess, compared to the way they've normally been. They saw it in practice, didn't they? They actually looked, well, the one practice session we got, 1.5, I guess you could call it, maybe.
Yeah.
The 1.5 practice sessions we got, the tyre life looked pretty reasonable for them. They were pretty punchy about that. And it turned out to be the case in the race. Even by the time we got all the way to the race, sometimes that disappears. It didn't for Ferrari, and they lent on that with a one-stop strategy. They were fast enough. This was probably pretty crucial for Ferrari. Fast enough ahead of the midfield. They didn't lose places at the second stop and just kind of ground that out. Mm. Also finished ahead of Perez, as we sort of already mentioned, which is, you know, somewhere between Ferrari's great execution and Perez having another off weekend, I suppose. But I always think it's a particular thing about Ferrari, and we heard it again briefly in the race, heard it a lot during qualifying when the team was mismanaging which tyres it was on compared to wet and dry conditions. Yeah. But we heard a little bit in the race when it sounded like the team wanted to pit Carlos Sainz way too early, despite it being sort of after the safety car period when he would have lost positions, and he sort of snapped back and he was like, nah, I don't reckon. I think the tyres are pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
And they agreed with him, which was the right call. But it strikes me that still Ferrari's the only team you'll hear the drivers really
fight
talk back to the strategy engineers. Yeah, and like, you know, sometimes Lewis will, but he'll always accept the decision, but not at Ferrari.
No, in a very different way though, isn't he? He's like, Bono, I don't want to. And he's like, ah, okay, but you got to. And he's like, fine. And then afterwards he might be, you know, grumpy about it and say, well, I know, I just told you we shouldn't have done it. But you're right, with Ferrari, there is this very different understanding between, you know, race engineer and driver of them almost dictating the race to the race engineer. And it's like, well, hang on, haven't you? They're racing at however many miles an hour. You've got the data in front of you. Why are the drivers telling you? And look, the drivers have to give their feel of what they think the track's like. If it's raining, you know, is it drying? Is it, you know, they have to give that important feedback that a race engineer can't get. But if you're talking about race strategy, why are the drivers really getting involved in that? And I think also for Sainz, he had a tricky weekend because he got caught out by the three place grid penalty, didn't he, from impeding Pierre Gasly, who was furious after the race. But you're right. It's this strange thing with Ferrari where you often hear Charles saying, I don't want to do that, and them going, okay. And you're like, well, who's in control here? You know, it's almost like saying to a child, like, can you know, the child's like, can I have some sugar? Can I have a lollipop? And the adult's like, no, you absolutely can't. No, but I want a lollipop. And they're like, Okay. You know, it doesn't work like that. Someone has to sort of take control of the situation and be like, you can't have a lollipop because you had 17 of them. You know, whatever it is, it's a really interesting situation with Ferrari. And I think we could sit here for ages and try and, you know, decipher exactly what Ferrari are doing and pick apart exactly what they're doing. But they're going through a transition period at the moment. You know, they've got Fred Vasseur that's only been there for a couple of races. He's really trying to understand the ins and outs of that team and where the weaknesses are, where the strengths are. And whenever you hear from Fred, he's very cagey. He's very, I don't really want to give you too much. I don't want you to know the ins and outs of what we're doing here. I don't want you to know where I found weaknesses, where I found strengths. I don't want any of that. What I'm going to do is maybe laugh at the little bit and sort of distract you with a shiny object in the corner. You know, it's very much they are in this rebuilding process because they know if they don't rebuild, they're going to lose a driver like Charles Leclerc. And they will if they don't start sorting it out. And Charles seems every single race weekend frustrated with something that's happened over a race weekend. So yeah, it's an interesting one with Ferrari. I think they're definitely on a rebuild at the moment. And I think, unfortunately, that now they've dropped out of sort of championship contention, as much as everyone has, really, because there's no one else that's going to beat Max. But you know what I mean? Like, there's no even hope now. It's, you know, it's a straight battle between Aston and Mercedes and Ferrari and into who's second best now, which is exciting. That's really exciting to not know who's the second best.
Well, again, the strategy of blocking out the leader, it is exciting.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just keep doing that. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, it is. The Ferrari rebuild process will be interesting to watch for a couple of different reasons. One being what it takes to rebuild the trust between the drivers and the strategists, I think.
Yeah.
Because for me, that just seems like where it's stemming from. The drivers are immediately skeptical when they hear a call over the radio and feel obliged to kind of argue back.
How do you trust it off the back of that? And look, we don't know the internet. We only ever hear select things that Formula One wants to show us of team radio. You know, Alex Albon's been very clear to say, I'm always quite shouty on the radio. That's just normally me. You know, when we pull him up on his comments, maybe, that he has over the radio, and he's like, that's always me. You just hear a very small amount of it. But there does seem some hesitation, doesn't there, between the pit wall and the drivers in terms of, I don't know if it's trust, that's unfair for me to sort of say, but do they think that the strategy is going to work out? And there is definite hesitation from both drivers at the moment in terms of exactly what Ferrari are hoping to deliver for them.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Let's move on to Alex Albon, though. One of the other great talking points of this race, speaking of him, big points for Williams in seventh place. And points are pretty hard to come by both for most midfield teams this season, to be honest, considering how many nominal front runners we have this year. And it was what James Valds described as a classic Albon defence. And I guess there have been a few of these. I don't know if it quite qualifies for classic yet, but it was certainly very good. I'll give you that. Made only one stop behind that safety car. The Williams car has been upgraded this weekend, as you mentioned earlier on. It's always pretty good in a straight line, but is still one of the slower cars on the grid. But just really lent on his ability to defend, manage his pace really well. And I thought this was a good example of sort of a reminder of the quality that we often don't get to talk about near the back of the grid. It's not often they get to express it, and this was a really golden opportunity for Alex.
Oh, come on. It was a masterclass. It was brilliant. It was great, and it was lovely to see. I mean, he started P9 on the grid, and he climbed all the way up to P7, and he managed to keep his car, maybe the widest car that I've ever seen on a Formula One track. He kept this train of cars behind him on his way to finish to P7. So I think he did a brilliant job. The confidence seemed to be absolutely brimming every single lap that he was going around. And like you said on the radio, I didn't think it was James Fowles, but maybe James said it afterwards, but his race engineer said, you know, we need to see some of that classic you know, Alex Albon defending that we know you're so good at. Afterwards, I seem to remember him saying that he felt it was very stressful, though, that he did feel that that it was a situation that he didn't feel as comfortable as maybe he looked out on track. And he also mentioned that he saw himself a lot on the screens as he was going around. He said, I felt like I was getting a lot of airtime because every time I looked at the TV screens, they were focused on me. And it's true, they were. You know, we don't often look at the, you know, P7 driver that's doing such a good job. He got driver of the day. They made a good call on the strategy. The result moved Williams up over AlphaTauri because they were bottom of the constructor. So, yeah, I think it's a really encouraging performance from a driver that actually really deserves it. And I think that's why we're all so excited about it as well, because he's a really nice guy. Yeah. It's nice to see a nice driver doing nice things. But I seem to remember he said that, you know, there was a point, I think it was lap 40 or something, and they were sort of saying, what do you want to do for the rest of the race? And I think they decided off the back of that, didn't they decide at that point to keep him on that tire, and that's why they decided on the one-stop strategy? And he was like, what? Like, are you guys crazy? Like, this is madness. And they did, and they kept him on, and he did an incredible job. And we've seen him manage his tires in really impressive ways in the past. So for me, it's really lovely to see a driver like that do well.
A similar kind of strategy to one I think he pulled off in Australia last year, although that involved
I was trying to remember where the other race was. I was probably asleep if it was Australia, I'm not lying to you. But I'm sure you were all over
it. I don't know how much of that was in the 5-minute highlights. So.
I always watch it. I'm just always like hazy in and out. I'm just like, oh, what's happening now? Go back to sleep.
Yeah. I appreciate it. This was the Canadian Grand Prix. I can certainly appreciate the sort of half open eyes kind of feeling of an early morning
late
night race.
Yeah, I bet for you.
Worth mentioning as well with Albon, the five drivers behind him, all the way down to 13th behind him, at the flag anyway, were within 5 seconds of him. And that was pretty much the case for at least the entire final third of the race. And surprising in some senses, despite it being so stressful for Alex, that so few other teams saw the possibility of a one-stop race in, let's be honest, a sport that often biases itself towards one-stop races. So really well done by the team to spot that, and of course by the driver to execute it. And as a final point, I say on the road, the drivers behind him, Lando Norris was set to score points for McLaren, some relatively rare points for McLaren.
Oh, Lando.
Penalised for, what was a safety car infringement, backing up cars so that the double stack would work. Unsportsmanlike conduct, I think, was the official wording of the International Sporting Code. This has become a little bit controversial, strangely enough.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of... I think when I first heard it, when I was listening to it on the radio, actually, because I was driving home from I was doing a race in the British Touring Cars in Alton Park, so I was listening to it as I was driving home, and I sort of heard that this had happened, that Oscar had come in for his pit stop, and Lando was sort of pootling around and holding people up a little bit while he waited for his own stop. And I didn't really think much of it, because that sometimes happens, you know. And also, when you're not really watching the pictures, you can't see exactly how much he's maybe holding back, you know, the people behind him. And then when it came through and it was this unsportsman, whatever it is, misconduct or whatever, I thought, I sat there for a good 5 minutes while I was driving, and I was like, have I ever heard that before? Have I ever heard the... And then I heard a bit later, a couple of days later, someone said to me, yeah, apparently they did it in 2005 in some Grand Prix for Fischer Keller. And I was like, what? You know, and you're just like, sorry, 2005, 18 years or so ago. I mean, my maths isn't very good, but that's a long time ago. I haven't fact checked that, because I don't actually know. And, you know, sometimes I think lots of things are made into a massive big deal when it's sort of not really needed. But the point I had really is that whatever the penalty was, they should have just stated that as the penalty. This is what I didn't quite understand about why they used such wording in terms of exactly what he did, because there was a part in the regulations that is directly against what he did. So you could have just pulled him up for that penalty and said, okay, you've done section X, Y, and Z, and that explains exactly what it is, slowing down and holding people up, basically. But they didn't. They picked out a very different wording for it, which I thought was an interesting thing. And then, yeah, I didn't quite understand what they were really doing with that. And I'd be interested to see if that's a bit of a benchmark now for what we see moving forward. Are we going to see that statement a lot more from the stewards? It just depends. And obviously, you know, as we all know, the stewards rotate and there's different stewards for different races. Usually one consistent one, at least at every race, but it's a different one at each race, if you get what I mean. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see if we see that again. But I can see why Lando was a bit maybe put out by the wording of it.
Yeah, it will be interesting. It's sort of been a question asked whether or not this is a new approach to that kind of behaviour. Again, not sure why it comes under the International Sporting Code instead of a regular kind of rule that's already been written for F1. But
who knows?
Just one of those stewards things.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, you could have literally put it under the coding that it was, but you know, we're not stewards. We just talk about stuff.
That's true. They've got their own job. They can figure it out.
We just make it all up. Exactly.
That was the Canadian Grand Prix. Another win for Max Verstappen. He's 41st. How many will he get to before the end of the year? Man, I'm going to be saying that all season.
78.
It would be very impressive. I don't know how many sprints we've got. Maybe it'll all add up. Thanks so much for joining me, Claire.
Thanks so much.
So is the gap at the front really closing? Red Bull Racing says it's now focused on next year's car, while both Aston Martin and Mercedes have more gains to come this season. Undoubtedly, progress has been made, but the track and the conditions played a bigger role in closing the gap to less than 10 seconds by the flag. It'll be interesting to get a truer read on the quartet of traditional circuits that are next on the calendar. Thanks very much to Claire Cottingham for joining me. You can subscribe to The Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts, and don't forget to leave us a rating and a review to help spread the word. You can also find us on social media. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. Special thanks to Ben Loke from Bloke Designs for the show artwork, and our theme music is by Simon Hosford. My name's Michael Laminato. I'll catch you in a couple of weeks for the Austrian Grand Prix. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Serasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.